It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
George W. Bush of the state of Texas has received for President of the United States 271 votes.
And with that, Vice President Al Gore, Democratic nominee and winner of the popular vote in 2000, serving as President of the Senate, certified that the Electoral College had awarded the presidency to Republican nominee George W. Bush. Now the Never Trumpers, remember them? See the Electoral College, which Donald Trump also won without capturing the popular vote, as the final arena for blocking the president-elect from taking the oath. 30 members of the Electoral College, including one Republican, citing the conclusion of the Central Intelligence Agency that Russia actively interfered to sway the outcome of the election, have written to Director of National Intelligence General James Clapper, seeking a briefing on the underlying intelligence before the electors cast their votes December 19th. And leading the charge is a California elector who is the daughter of House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi.
Our independence elections ought to be what define us as a country. And so if there is evidence that not only was the election tainted, but that one of the candidates knew about that and profited from it, then that certainly is something that the electors should know in advance.
Supporting the request is the chairman of Hillary Clinton's campaign, John Podesta, the very person whose email account posted online by WikiLeaks is said by CIA to have been hacked with Russian complicity.
I'm here. That was James Rosen on Fox. This is so interesting. This is so interesting. The electors, of course, are voting this coming Monday on the election, and it's almost surreal that the left is trying to combine this accusation. I saw this coming. We talked about this. I remember talking with Hans von Zwickowski about this several months ago, and I told him, Hans, they're setting it up. They're setting it up, this narrative that Russia... Donald Trump is close to Russia, and Russia's going to then, if he wins, it's going to be blamed on Russia. We talked about that, and actually Hans was a little bit of a skeptic at the time, but no more, that's for sure. So James has more to the report. Let's listen to it, and then I'm going to tell you some other things.
The White House, however, stopped short of endorsing the request, indeed pointed out a big hurdle to granting it.
I know that some of the request was for classified information, and it's not clear that all of the... electors, and I'm sure most of them don't have security clearances.
The president-elect told Fox News Sunday that Democrats are peddling the account of Russian meddling because, quote, they suffered one of the greatest defeats in the history of American politics.
Then it's ridiculous. We ought to get back to making America great again, which is what we're going to do, and we've already started the process.
As the Electoral College vote approaches, some Trump electors have reported being on the receiving end of hate mail, and worse.
And unfortunately, I've received a couple of death threats, some death wishes, and just some angry messages from people who are disappointed in the election results.
A source at the Republican National Committee told me that what concern exists over this play for the Electoral College is tied not to defections, but to resignations. Not all states have replacement mechanisms in place.
Okay, James Rosen giving a great report as always. He's one of my favorite reporters at Fox, by the way. Okay, so the Electoral College votes on Monday. All eyes are on all 50 states because they vote in each of the 50 sovereign states. And I told you yesterday that MoveOn.org sent an email out probably 36 hours ago now trying to stir up their members to do something about this, to stop those electors, make them demand an intelligence briefing. And now we know, and James just said, that the person pushing for that, at least the spokesperson, is Nancy Pelosi's daughter. I'm sure she has no, particular axe to grind on this. But, of course, she's pushing it. And now so is John Podesta. His emails were leaked. I think that probably John Podesta's email, I spent as much time talking about that as I did Hillary Clinton's email, because they were a treasure trove of conspiracies, entanglements. It was kind of unbelievable and very revealing. He was the head of her campaign. He's, of course, the head of the Center for American Progress, which is the think tank behind the left. He's been doing that for a number of years. He's a powerful guy. So now he's coming out and demanding, you know, that, or at least strongly suggesting that these electors need this. They need this intelligence briefing about the Russians who, according to the Washington Post and the CIA, interfered with our election and tried and were responsible. This is what they're inferring, of course, for Donald Trump winning. But there was an open letter that went to the director of national intelligence, James Clapper, and it says this: "We further require a briefing on all investigative findings, as these matters directly impact the core factors in our deliberations of whether Mr. Trump is fit to serve as president of the United States." And then the Washington Post article that I shared with you just a couple of days ago, it was published last Friday. And this is what they said: "The CIA has high confidence the Russian government tried to help the Trump campaign. But it's not that simple, because the FBI disagrees, says it's not conclusive. And it is even more complicated than that. And we're going to get into that. I'm going to let Catherine Herridge take it from here, and then I'm going to expand on that, because there is even some more information after Catherine gave this report. But let's listen.
The U.S. government source says the Director of National Intelligence, which oversees the U.S. intelligence community, is not on the same page as the CIA, and the issue comes down to understanding the hacker's intent as well as nuance. Fox News is told that the election hacks are being wrongly lumped together into one bucket when they were separate and discrete events, to include the DNC and DCCC, which raises money for Democratic congressional races, the Clinton campaign emails released through WikiLeaks, and the probing of state boards of election to steal voter registration data. After the intelligence community issued this statement in October on Russian involvement, the probing attacks on the state boards dropped off. 9 days after the election, DNI Clapper confirmed this during congressional testimony, adding that they didn't have the same level of certainty about Russia's hand in the Clinton campaign emails.
As far as the WikiLeaks connection, the evidence there is not as strong, and we don't have good insight into the sequencing of the releases or when the data may have been provided.
The U.S. government source points out the FBI has a different standard in these cases, evidence that can be used for a criminal prosecution, York. Late yesterday, tension between Capitol Hill and the intelligence community really escalated with the Republican chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, Devin Nunes, sending a letter to the Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper. The letter asked Clapper whether the intelligence community's position on Russian involvement and intent to influence the election in favor of Mr. Trump has changed since his November testimony, or whether the leaks are politically motivated and designed to discredit the incoming administration. Congressman Nunes has called for a classified briefing to deconflict what we're hearing from the CIA and FBI no later than Friday this week.
All right, so thank you, Catherine. But here's the thing. These electors are calling, the ones that are rebelling, the handful of them, is they're calling themselves the Hamilton electors. And that, I'm sure that's from the music Hamilton. I remember that's the same musical. It's based on the life of Alexander Hamilton. I think loosely based on the life of Alexander Hamilton. Remember, that's the cast that embarrassed and rudely lectured Vice President-elect Michael Pence and his family as they were just attending the Hamilton. That's the musical. So they've named themselves, you know, after, they're calling themselves the Hamilton electors. It's actually very smart, you see, because people love that musical. And they do this. They're very savvy to where people are, the combination of being uninformed and also just sentiment, just public sentiment. So that's what's happening, but that's not all. I told you yesterday, in fact, we posted online an article in which the former British ambassador to Uzbekistan, whose name is Craig Murray, said that he's very close to Julian Assange. And he said that the WikiLeaks source... Now, this is different than hacking into the voter system, okay? It's like Catherine explained, there's different, we're talking about different things here. Alleged hack at playing with our voting system is not the same thing as hacking into John Podesta's email or Hillary Clinton's email. But now we're talking about alleged hacking by the Russians into DNC email, into John Podesta. And so Craig Murray says, no, there's no way that happened. And he said, of course, the leak is not a hack. The two are very different things. And he said it did not come from the Russians. But now there's more on this today. We put that article on our Facebook page, and I think it's probably still there. But here's a new one. This is from the Daily Mail. And he said he actually met with the person who was an insider. He was very upset about how Hillary Clinton had treated Bernie Sanders, at the unfairness, at the way it was rigged. And so it was that that spurred this major leak of these DNC email on. And so Craig Murray flew to the United States, met this person. Now, it wasn't the person who actually stole the, or they don't steal it. They had access to it. The person who handed over the email was not the same person who actually captured it. So there were two people involved, and he said they were definitely not Russian. And so, you know, yesterday we had David Satter, who's a, no, yesterday, actually, I'm getting myself confused. I hosted for Tony Perkins on Washington Watch, and I had my friend David Satter, who's a Russian expert. He speaks fluent Russian. He worked for the, he's just infinitely qualified to understand these things. And he was just saying that the Russians could have done this, but Craig Murray is saying it isn't, it was not the Russians. It was this insider for the DNC. And so that's the update on that. We should put that on our Facebook page today. It's from the Daily Mail. It says WikiLeaks operative claims emails given by Democratic insiders in the D.C. park. By the way, it was near American University. They even include a map to show where he met them. Oh, and the other thing that David Satter said on the air with me at Washington Watch is that Julian Assange, for whatever you think about him, has not been known for lying about anything, and certainly no one has debunked the authenticity of the things that he's leaked. So he believes that Julian Assange at least is not a liar about this stuff. And I told you also yesterday that Tony Schaefer, former Army intelligence officer, is laying this at the feet of John Brennan. Now, John Brennan is the head of the CIA. And John Brennan, he believes that John Brennan has taken this intelligence and claiming the CIA believes that Russia hacked the election because John Brennan has political motives, ulterior motives. And interestingly, I think you caught this when Catherine reported last night, but there was a huge dust-up last night. The House Intelligence Committee had asked James Clapper, the head of the DNI, and also FBI, a representative from the FBI and from the CIA, to come and testify. We've got to sort this thing out. They were going to do a behind-closed-doors assessment of why the FBI's intelligence didn't match CIA's and did not match what James Clapper just said in November when he said we don't have any evidence to show that the Russians did this. And you know what? They stood them up. They refused to testify. They did not show up. I mean, and Devin Nunes is the head of that committee. He's furious. And he wrote this, it is unacceptable that the Intelligence Committee directors would not fulfill the House Intelligence Committee's request to be briefed tomorrow on the cyber attacks that occurred during the presidential campaign. The legislative branch is constitutionally vested with oversight responsibility of executive branch agencies, which are obligated to comply with our requests. The committee is vigorously looking into reports of cyber attacks during the election campaign, and in particular, we want to clarify press reports that the CIA has a new assessment that it has not shared with us. The committee is deeply concerned that intransigence in sharing intelligence with Congress can enable the manipulation of intelligence for political purposes. And then it gets even more complicated after that. In fact, I'll come back with more of this. And then this whole business about Georgia's Secretary of State, their system being hacked, that's an interesting story with a little different twist. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
We are going to the Holy Land in March. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. I only lead one tour a year. to Israel. It's not my day job. It's just an annual tour that I do as I learn from my dad how to take folks to Israel. And we're going to have a wonderful experience. Most of the folks going are listeners to American Family Radio, are supporters of American Family Association. And we're going to have a great time March 9th through the 17th. If you want information on this tour of the Holy Land, you can do it two ways. You can call us at 800-FAMILIES, option 5. 1-800-FAMILIES, option 5. That's families with an S. And leave us your name and your address, and we'll put a brochure in the mail to you. And if you want to go online, you can visit us at twholyland.com. twholyland.com. Again, won't be long till we close out this tour, so if you want more information, let us know. Your American Family Association will never quit.
We will never quit, ever.
We will continue to stand for God's truth as long as we have breath and the religious liberty to do so.
We believe that God might still show mercy to America by sending revival.
So, we will continue to be salt and light in our nation.
Thank you for standing with the American Family Association this year through your prayers, your financial partnership, and your determination to be salt and light where you live. In the days ahead, we ask for your continued involvement so that as battles arise, your American Family Association will be here to fight for your family, fight for America.
Let me tell you something. All God asks of you is faithfulness. That's it.
Today, when you give $35 or more, we'll send you the new book, Our Call to Faithfulness, The Voice and Legacy of Don Wildman. Visit afa.net/faithfulness.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and Commentary next. How would you like to finish your degree online? Truett-McConnell University makes that possible with their top-notch online program. You can even earn a master's in theology. For 70 years, Truett-McConnell University has been preparing students to fulfill God's high calling on their lives, on campus or online. A degree that can not only change your life, but also your workplace. Truett.edu is the website. That's Truett.edu. A disturbing series of events to tell you about from Orange Coast College in California. A teacher identified as Olga Perez Cox was caught on film telling the class the election of Donald Trump was an act of terrorism. The student who secretly filmed the teacher now faces punishment for apparently violating school policy. But what happened after the filming stopped was even more shocking. Two eyewitnesses tell CBS News the teacher instructed students who supported Donald Trump to stand up and identify themselves. She allegedly wanted to out the Donald Trump supporters so students would know who to protect themselves from. This kind of behavior is simply unacceptable. And quite frankly, the teacher should have been fired. This is America. We don't force people to out their religious or political beliefs or any other beliefs for that matter. That's what they did in 1930s Nazi Germany. I'm Todd Starnes.
Merry Christmas from American Family Radio and Sandy Rios in the Morning. Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Should we have our hair on fire that hacking took place? No, I mean, that's what happens. If he can discredit the integrity of what we do here in the voting process and electing folks, he is winning.
We have the president-elect of the United States publicly condemning the intelligence services on which he will have to rely as president. If I'm running that covert action, I'm putting it in the win column.
It's quite possible that the Republican Party has been exploited and Donald Trump himself might have been exploited over the years by Russian intelligence.
All right, so there you go. It just gets, it spins. That was Bob Corker, Senator Bob Corker in the first clip. And it's amazing. Now, of course, Clapper is saying, the defense intelligence, ahead of defense intelligence is saying, we have no evidence. The FBI saying we have no evidence. The CIA saying, oh, yes, we know. And that's, of course, John Brennan. And we've talked about that. But before we leave this topic, I want you to know that the president, of course, not of course, you know, generally speaking, presidents, when a new election happens, they hand the baton off to the next president. And they encourage, at least by example, the people that supported them to support the new candidate. It's part of the process here. It's part of unifying government. We have even the little rituals of the new president coming to the White House, you know, with his wife, and they walk through after the inauguration. We have those things for a reason. It's so that people can, so that the country can be united and have confidence in its government. But not so with our president now. He's ordered a full intelligence committee review of foreign efforts to influence recent presidential elections. All right, look, there's nothing wrong with that. But let me add this next part. They want to find out if Russia interfered in the election with the purpose of helping Trump's campaign. So, you know, it's not nonpartisan. It isn't just, oh, this is terrible that perhaps a foreign power has interfered with our election. It is, they've got a reason. They've got a purpose. That's why John Podesta's stepping up to the plate. That's why Nancy Pelosi's daughter stepping up to the plate. They have a plan, and they are trying to subvert the system in what they're doing. It's just pretty shocking. And then there's one last thing about this that I wanted to make sure I told you, because I actually skipped this story a couple of days ago, and I want to get to it. The Georgia Secretary of State's office, under the leadership of their, I think his name is Kemp, Brian Kemp, has been saying now for, I don't know, weeks, days, that Georgia, the Secretary of State's office, which handles all their elections, has been hacked 10 separate times, 10 separate cyber attacks on his network. But here's the thing. All 10 of those attacks can be traced back, oh, not to Russia, but to the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. And he's been saying that. You know, I read this a few days ago, and it sounded like it was just one attempt. No, he says there's been 10. And now he's sent inquiries to the Department of Homeland Security, to Jay Johnson, and he said they keep changing their story. They give him insufficient information. They blame it on, they said first it was somebody down in Corpus Christi. Then they said, no, it was a contractor in Georgia. It was just a big mistake. It's some of the software problem. On and on it goes. But the problem is the hacks came on very important dates. For instance, on November 15th, on February 2nd, the day after Georgia's voter registration deadline, they were hacked. The next one took place just before the SEC primary. And another occurred in May, the day before the general primary. And then two more took place in November, the day before and the day of the presidential election. So not exactly random. 10 separate cyber attacks traced back to Homeland Security. And the reason that's important, if it isn't obvious, is because who's hacking? Just wondering, who's doing the hacking? Is there a reason why, you know, I tell you that the left always accuses their enemies of doing what they themselves are guilty of. And so could it be that they could be caught in a serious, really crime to use a federal agency to hack, you know, this is one state. I think there were reports of other attempted hackings, too. I can't report on those specifically, but certainly Georgia has enough information and detail that we can use as an example. Could it be possibly that the left has dirty hands on this and they're trying to sort of subvert the attention? I don't know, but we're going to find out, because now the Secretary of State from Georgia has written Donald Trump, and he's explained this, and he's saying, I don't think I'm getting satisfaction. I don't think they're telling me the truth, and I'm asking you to investigate this once you become president. So this is interesting. Very, very interesting. I want to change the subject a little bit. And let's see. Maybe I'll do it this way. There is a film producer, Ami Horowitz, who I played one of his clips a few months ago, where he went into a community in Minnesota, and it was a Somali community. You may remember it. And he interviewed them, asked if they believed in Sharia over the Constitution, and they said yes, and they believed in pretty much with the questions, jihad and all of that. Well, he's done another production in Sweden. It's 10 minutes long, but it is really fascinating. And I want you to hear parts of it, and then I'm going to relate it to what's happening here at home. This is the first opening. This is a little bit of an insight into what's happening with refugees in Sweden. Ami Horowitz, cut set.
Sweden, home to hot blondes, dead Vikings, and the Swedish chef. Now, add another thing to this list. Sweden is now the proud owner of the title, the rape capital of Europe. Sweden has always had a reputation of being a harmonious and liberal society. This image has been shattered as rape has skyrocketed over the past 5 years. At the same time, Sweden has been going through a revolutionary demographic shift that has seen the country take in more refugees from Islamic countries than any Western nation in the world. This immigration has led to culture clashes and to enclaves of self-contained societies across Sweden. This is Annika Henroth Rostein. She's a Swedish journalist who has extensively covered the Middle Eastern migration into Sweden.
What we have is, first of all, a Swedish culture. Then we bring in, like last year, 190,000 people that come from a very different culture, a culture that isn't liberal, that has radically different views on women, on sexuality, on gender, on all of these things. There's an explosion.
All right, so that's and so Ami has several conversations with this writer, the Swedish girl, and you'll find in the video that she is very unusual. No one else really wants to be honest with him. And by the way, Sweden has taken, I think, more refugees proportionately than any other country in Europe. Ami goes on to talk about the effect on women, and he said in his opening that it had become the rape capital of Europe. But you have to hear this next part. Here's Ami Horowitz.
I was not the first person assaulted by gangs of immigrants, nor will I be the last. But women are taking the brunt of the explosion of violence across Sweden. When I went to a police station, I noticed that the vast majority of the people waiting to report a crime were women. Later, the police officer who I met with told me that most were there to report rape. These attacks are happening across Sweden, including a rash of rapes at music festivals. Over the past 2 years, dozens of young women, some as young as 12, were raped at these festivals across Sweden by hundreds of young immigrants. They use the tactic where dozens of men surround one or more girls in circles. While the men in the inner circle sexually attacks their victims, the outer circle distracts and keeps out anyone who would stop it. The attacks have become so common that some bands, most notably Mumford & Sons, refuse to play in Sweden.
This has happened multiple times and to multiple victims. Then the issue is that when it is reported, this was widely known by the people who were there, the police that was on the scene, but then they put the lid on it. So
they covered it up.
They covered it up. So we didn't learn about this until much, much later.
While the police have told me that the majority of the people that they arrest for rape are from Islamic backgrounds, BRA, the official keeper of Swedish crime statistics, curiously dropped the background of those arrested from the official statistics.
The government has failed to recognize that it's made a huge mistake. And the European Union has failed to recognize that it's made a huge mistake. And we have this free movement. And the movement, of course, is flowing toward the country with the most generous social benefit system.
All right, so then they go on. Ami goes out into the street and he interviews several of the refugees. And they talk about the benefits. He's asking them what they're receiving. It is unbelievable, the things that they're getting. And so but the violence, he talks about the violence. It's not just rape. It's all of the crime increase. And then he brings in two Swedish police officers. And this is a most fascinating exchange to me. I want you to hear his conversation with Ami Horowitz in Sweden.
Anders Gorazin and Jacob Ekstrom are veteran and decorated policemen who have decades of experience and are tasked with policing within the immigrant community.
Has there been an increase in violence and crime here in Sweden?
More violence and harder violence with guns and...
What type of weapons are you guys seeing on the streets?
You can see
Kalashnikovs, hand grenades from the east, guns, handguns, everything you can find in Afghanistan, you can find here.
Doesn't Sweden have very strict gun laws?
For sure, you know, and we get all the time, we get new laws about guns, tighten up more. I think it's good, but you know, the violence increases anyway.
Would you go as far as to say that these no-go areas are essentially states within a state?
Yeah, most of the no-go areas is like that.
Are there areas where if you're pursuing somebody, where you'll simply stop and not pursue them once they get into this no-go area?
Yeah.
If the police is chasing another car for some kind of crime, if they reach what we call no-go areas, the police wouldn't go after it.
Do you see the violence really spreading across Sweden into the cities?
At least one or two times a week.
And let's say 5 years ago, how often would you say it was?
No.
Three times a year.
Really? The increase in this kind of crime is exponential.
I think we caught off guard. We didn't expect it to be so much increase.
Do you think there's a deliberate attempt to cover up these type of crimes?
Rather than that they don't want to seem racist.
Is there a sort of sensitivity or people scared that if you identify who's committing these type of crimes, that you could be labeled a racist?
Of course. I think this issues make people nervous all over the world, not only even in Sweden. It's make me nervous as well.
The thing that was not there was, he says, it makes me nervous as well. He said, look at me, I'm blonde. So it's a stunning exchange. This is Ami Horowitz in Sweden talking about how it's become the rape capital of the world. He shows police stations filled with women reporting these rapes. He actually shows homemade video, phone video of a woman being assaulted by a group of Muslim men. It's not graphic, but boy, it's graphic enough that you get the gist of it. It's just shocking. And then he interviews, of course, and then women are being raped at these rock concerts, and it's becoming common. And then the astonishing thing to me is the conversation with these two policemen. And you know, the thing that I notice is that they're so beaten down. They have no swag, if you know what I mean. They're not like men who carry a gun and try to enforce the law should be, confident. And male and just able to do what their job is, able to rise to the occasion. These guys seem beaten down, frightened. I was surprised they spoke as freely as they did. And so then, of course, Ami asked them, are you afraid of being accused of being racist? And of course we are. But now he goes out on the street, Ami does, and he asks people on the street about what they think is happening in Sweden. You have to listen to this.
Do you think the sexual assault problem is an Islamic problem or not?
No. I think it's a general problem among men.
Yeah, the problem isn't like this culture or that culture. The problem is male culture.
I don't think the immigrants is the problem.
No, it's not. Like, that's just like a tiny, tiny bit of the problem. And like, when that happens, like, it's because we didn't like bring them in the right way.
And I don't see that connection at all. And I would very much like to see the evidence of such a connection.
Do you think it's almost racist to make that connection?
Yes, I think so.
Is there a point where you think that Sweden has done too much to bring people in, or do you think there's...
No, there is no too much in helping people.
And is there a limit, do you think, to how many immigrants Sweden can take?
No.
Amazing, amazing video. And I have to tell you, if not for this election, this is the direction we were headed. And I have evidence of that, at least from my own perspective, just some of the things that have happened this week in that regard in this administration. We have really managed to dodge a bullet, because we will be Europe. If we had continued on that path, we would have been Europe. We've got to take a break. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Are you concerned about the future? The AFA Foundation can help.
End-of-year giving allows you to offset your current taxable income, providing you with valuable tax savings on this year's return. And your generous gift will help further the mission of AFA to inform, equip, and motivate people in the culture war for years to come. Through the AFA Foundation, you're supporting the work of the American Family Association by helping individuals and families leave a legacy to help stem the tide of secularism and rebuild our Christian foundations. As the end of the year approaches, carefully considering what to give and when to give it can increase the impact of your gift while still meeting your own needs as well. For example, with a cash donation, your itemized tax return may allow you to receive up to the full value of your charitable gift. Contact the AFA Foundation through Facebook at our website, afafoundation.net, or call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
By the way, that's one of the reasons why I appreciate your broadcast as well, Jan. We need people that speak the truth today.
This is Jan Markell, and I try to help you understand the times each week here on AFR Talk. I believe we need to discern the times, and the Bible says we need to contend for the faith. We do that with you every Saturday at 1 and Sunday noon Central Time. Understanding the Times Radio, helping you be a watchman on the wall, Saturday at 1, Sunday 12 Central, here on AFR Talk.
You experienced a call to ministry later in life, and now you're in a second career. You like to call it your calling. You know you need more preparation, but how? Where? Hello, I'm John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi, where an online Master of Divinity degree can be tailor-made for you. Small class size, individual attention, learning opportunities that fit your busy schedule. Wesley Biblical Seminary, where we equip the called. WBS.edu.
Hey, I'm Brant. So there's this guy named Jordan. He's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. And he goes to the doctor, true story, he goes to the doctor, and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage 4. And here's the thing. He had switched earlier from medical insurance to MediShare, where Christians share each other's medical bills. So the question for Jordan and his wife, Jenny, was, is this actually going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. So if you want to find out more, here is a number for you. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The Pentagon figures it could save $125 billion if it were making more efficient use of administrative personnel. Evidently, a million of them is excessive. They're the tail in the military's proverbial tooth-to-tail ratio, the calculation of actual warfighters compared to the vastly larger number of folks who support them. For years, it's been clear that ratio is out of whack. But the Obama Defense Department chose to suppress this confirmatory internal audit. Presumably, that's because the last time the armed forces wrung out significant savings on the promise they would be plowed back into desperately needed investments in warfighting priorities, Team Obama ripped them off. As Donald Trump's Pentagon team gets down to work next month, my bet is they're going to do some belt tightening. This time, however, the money saved will go towards keeping us safe. This is Frank Affney.
Merry Christmas from American Family Radio and Sandy Rios in the Morning.
Assault problem is an Islamic problem or
no,
not really?
No. I think it's a general problem among men.
Yeah, the problem isn't like this culture or that culture. The problem is male culture.
I don't think the immigrant is the problem.
No, it's not. Like, that's just like a tiny bit of the problem. And like, when that happens, like, it's because we didn't like bring... bring them in the right way.
And I don't see that connection at all.
You
and
don't.
I would very much like to see the evidence of such a connection.
Do you think it's almost racist to make that connection?
Yes, I think so.
Is there a point where you think that Sweden's done too much to bring people in, or do you think there's...
No, there is no too much in helping people.
And is there a limit, do you think, to how many immigrants Sweden can take?
No, no.
Okay, so Ami Horowitz in Sweden doing that incredible 10-minute video. We're going to put that on our Facebook page because I just want you to see it. It's amazing. It's not like it's the first time we've heard about this, but I have not spoken about what's going on in Europe in a while because we've been covering the election. But it's only getting worse. And the response is amazing to me. It's like it's suspended understanding. And I have to say, it's the quintessential example of what happens when people are only fed fake news. Dare I say it? The real fake news. Lies. I mean, you heard them say, the women said, no, it's not an Islamic problem. Yes, it is. It is everywhere. There is a prevalence of Sharia adherent male Muslims. There's lots of rape and assault. There are honor killings. There's violence, especially if they go into a different culture because they want to dominate. But these women don't know that because they've been told, you heard one of them say, one guy say, well, we didn't bring them in the right way. It's our fault, really. See, if we had brought them in a better way, they would not be raping all these women. And then, of course, it's not an Islamic problem. It's a general problem among men. It's male culture. So it's like those white blonde policemen, it's male culture, it's their fault. It's not, you know, it has nothing to do with any kind of religion, and it is racist to infer. And that's, do you see the theme? I mean, this is what we're being set up to mimic as well. And it's just not tethered to reality. And it's, let me just say, there's an article this morning about the mayor of the mayor of Rome, saying something similar. She told an immigration summit of European city leaders that mayors need to be the first to welcome refugees with warmth, shelter, and accommodation. Now, look, I have no problem with mayors being the first to welcome refugees with warmth, shelter, and accommodation. But this is an invasion. This is an intentional invasion, and that's the part they refuse to comprehend and accept. These are mostly male, and they have a reason. They have a purpose, and it is domination, and it is invasion. Not maybe every single one of them, but the pattern is just too strong to deny. And so the mayor of Rome says, our cities seem to be closed off with their self-interest, and mayors are the ones who should give the first reception. She goes on to, she said, the behavior of the richest countries, the prevalence of individual interests and the exploitation of natural resources and the globalization, all of this has made many poor countries the subject of conquest. So it's our fault. Rich countries are ultimately responsible for this, and so now we have to go, whatever it takes, take as many. In fact, Italy is just being overrun right now. And the EU has not given them, of course, they're all part of the European Union, and they depend on the EU because they're not individual sovereign nations anymore. The EU has not been giving enough money to assimilate, and so the poor Italians now are getting poorer, and the benefits are going to the, many of the benefits are going to these refugees. But coming back into our country, Ami Horowitz and that had gone into Cedar Riverside, that's a neighborhood in Minneapolis. And I talked about that when he did that. And my national security friends are telling me that no-go zones are developing. They're already in Minnesota, but they're emerging in Phoenix and, of course, Dearborn, Michigan. And I don't know where else. But this is what's going to happen if we don't put a stop to it. And let me just tell you what's happening now at the highest part of our law enforcement. I mentioned this briefly on Monday, but I'm just now hearing what actually took place. Mrs. Loretta Lynch, the Attorney General, visited one of the most controversial mosques in Washington, D.C. It's called the Adams Center. It's the All Dulles Area Muslim Society. And let me tell you why it's controversial. I'll just go back to the back here. Majid. What's his full name? He is. He was the founder of the Islamic Society of North America, Muhammad Majid. He's the executive director of the Adams Center. Again, he was the founder and president of the Islamic, he's the former president of the Islamic Society of North America. And you must know, because I've said it enough times, that they are an affiliate of the Muslim Brotherhood, a terrorist organization that has infiltrated our country, works through its mouthpiece CARE, the Council for American Islamic Relations. How do I know? Because of the Holy Land Foundation trial, which has been squelched, the information been blocked out, but it's still available. That they are strong. They've given $12 million to Hamas, the terrorist organization, and we know by the Holy Land Foundation trial information from the Muslim Brotherhood that their intention is to destroy our miserable house from within. Those are their words. And since that Holy Land Foundation trial, they have infiltrated incredibly. So the president of the Islamic Society of North America is the head of the Adams Center, where our attorney general went to speak. What did she say? It was December the 12th. She said, it's been a difficult time for many Muslim Americans. She asserted that in the march toward perfecting an imperfect union, America still had its shortcomings, with 2015 FBI hate crime statistics showing perhaps most troubling of all, a 67% increase in hate crimes committed against Muslim Americans, and the highest total of anti-Muslim incidents since 2001, when 9/11 spurred so many reprehensible acts. But that's a perversion of what the stats actually show. I'm reading from an article by Ben Weingarten, from Conservative Review. And this is what Ben says. Per usual, A.G. Lynch failed to note that despite this relatively drastic increase, anti-Islamic crimes accounted for 21.9% of the 1,402 victims of all anti-religious hate crimes. That is, just over 300 people in a country of more than 300 million. Anti-Jewish hate crimes, meanwhile, accounted for the majority of all anti-religious hate crimes at 52.1%. So anti-Muslim crimes were 21.9% of the stat, but Jewish hate crimes were 52.1%. That she's not so much worried about. And then he goes on to describe that many of these incidents have proven to be hoaxes, and that reminds me of an article I just saw this morning. Here it is. New York City college student Yasmin Zewaid, who claimed to be the victim of a hate crime by Trump supporters, is under arrest and charged with filing a false report. She said she was on a subway. She claimed three men attempted to pull off her hijab while calling her a terrorist and yelling Trump's name. All this, she said, happened while New Yorkers sat idly by and watched her get assaulted. Trouble is, the police said that they gave her numerous times to recant her story, that the details kept changing. And while the New York media repeated this report, taking it at face value, did not include any qualifiers like alleged, claimed. They reported it as fact. And in fact, the headline for BuzzFeed was, which is an outlet of Newsweek, "Drunk Men Yelling Donald Trump Attempt to Remove Women's Hijab on New York City Subway." So there's one of the stories that Mrs. Lynch referred to. Let me come back to Mrs. Lynch at the Adams Center, the mosque in Washington, D.C. So she said, she noted that there were a flurry of recent news reports about alleged hate crimes and harassment, from hijabs yanked off of women's heads to swastikas sprayed on the sides of synagogues to slurs and epithets hurled in classrooms, and reassuring the audience that the FBI is on the case. Ben wrote, he goes on to say, she ignores the fact that many of these incidents have been proven to be hoaxes. Never does the Obama administration present evidence that Muslims are being killed in hate crimes in numbers anywhere near the victims of jihadist attacks in our country. And Ben goes on to talk about female genital mutilation, honor killings, and he said in the United States there were 23 to 27 victims per year. They have been. More than 18 individuals murdered in all hate crimes in 2015. So the bottom line is there are more estimated honor killings in this country than hate crime murders per year in America. And then he says that Lynch suggested that Muslim Americans are being targeted and demonized simply because of their faith due to the actions of those who pervert Islam. And then he goes on to point out that Mrs. Lynch is no expert in Islamic jurisprudence. And so she has no ability to say anything like that. She also went on to move to the importance of protecting LGBTQ community rights, which, of course, are not recognized under Islamic law. And she also talked about the importance of preserving the Bill of Rights and freedom generally. I could go on and on. I think we should put Ben's article in Conservative Review on our Facebook page so that you can see it. But my point is this, that the Obama administration, in cooperation with the media and Hollywood, have managed to put America in such a vulnerable place where we almost are almost as bad as the Swedes. I want to say that word my mother would not allow me to say, which is has to do with intelligence, but I'm not allowed to say that word that starts with S. But honestly, how dumb can you be? The Swedes are living there. They're having this insurgence, this invasion, a rape, violent crime is up unbelievably. Women are reporting it. Police are not able to go into the communities to protect them. And yet, it's not a problem with one group of people over another. And yet it's that one group of people who are doing all of this. It's just amazing. And that's exactly what our president and his administration have been wanting us to believe. That there's a, you know, they continue. In fact, George W. Bush started this, although I'm sure he had no idea. I'm confident that former President George W. Bush only had a very shallow understanding of the things that he was saying. And he was being briefed by operatives of the Muslim Brotherhood, a courtesy of Grover Norquist, Americans for Tax Reform. It was Grover who brought in the Muslim Brotherhood into the White House, courtesy of Karl Rove. And so they briefed him, and he came out. That's the reason that President Bush came out talking about what a peaceful religion Islam was and how wonderful, one of the world's great religions. And then you saw a parade of Muslim Brotherhood operatives posing with the president, you know, in the various rooms of the White House. And that's the reason. And, of course, it's a misinterpretation of Islam. There are lots of peaceful Muslims. But the problem is when push comes to shove, their sympathies go to Sharia. Either they adhere to Sharia or they have sympathy with it. It's kind of like being a Christian who doesn't really, claiming to be a Christian, who has respect for the Bible but doesn't obey it, doesn't follow its moral teachings, doesn't spend time in the Word, doesn't spend time in church, and yet still wants to believe and claim to believe the teachings of Christ. I think that's the way it is with Muslims in this country. And of course, as I said, I'm sure there are thousands of Muslims who don't want anything to do with violence. I've heard Muslim men, more than one I've interviewed, say to me that when they became a Christian, they became a follower of Christ. One of the most wonderful things about that was that they didn't have to be violent. They didn't have to seek revenge. And the whole notion of forgiveness and the weight of the world was lifted from their shoulders when they realized that the true God, not Allah, Jehovah, the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, was a God of peace. Of course, he brings justice and judgment through violent means sometimes, but it's not violence as an end in itself. He comes to bring life and that we might have more abundant life. It's a beautiful story, and there's no comparison with that of the story of Allah. So we are so grateful, and this is a time when of all the things we should be grateful for, this is certainly one of them. And we need to pray for our brothers and sisters and friends in Europe because they are going through real turmoil. And unless they become wiser than they are now, they've given up God. It's a post-God world in Europe, at least post-our God. And unless they embrace him, this foolishness might continue. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.